But now to some stories from Dublin about the Easter Rising and about one group's role, which is only now coming to light. Their incredible stories.
Well, Saturday Extra listeners will know that I'm a great fan of public gardens wherever I visit. I love seeing the choices that are made by different towns and cities and cultures. And I've come into St Stephen's Green, which is one of the most famous public gardens in the world, which is just full of the most beautiful daffodils and giant seagulls, I might add, and just people gambolling around, beautiful atmosphere. It certainly wasn't a century ago when this was one of the garrisons of the rebellion and where it was a lot of bloodshed in and around here. It's also where one of the most famous women, Countess Markovitz, involved in the whole uprising, played a major role. And it set me thinking about the role of women, which has been such a huge issue in this centenary. In fact, a lot of the Irish female writers have been saying, well, hallelujah for that, because they certainly were airbrushed out of history for the previous many decades. And it was a deliberate thing too. I'll test that with the woman I'm about to meet now, Monica McInerney, who's actually an Australian writer who's been living in Ireland for 25 years and who, like me, has become utterly fascinated, nay, obsessed with this centenary. Monica, welcome.
Hello, Geraldine.
Now, you know, it has been very interesting, I think, to watch the role of women giving really come to the forefront. Well, not the forefront, but they've been given a major role. Am I right in saying this is the first time really in a public sense since the rebellion itself?
I think so, definitely. This 100-year anniversary, centenary, it's the women's stories are being told certainly much more than they ever were, definitely much more than the last major landmark commemoration, which was the 1966 events. For lots of reasons, I think. It's a different time now than it was 50 years ago. Women want to hear their own stories. And also, there's been a situation that a lot more of the military records and the archives have been opened and are available digitally for scholars and historians to go through. So it's not just a matter of realising that it was just a male rebel rebellion, but so many women were involved, not just Countess Markovitz, who you mentioned, who was one of the stars because she was so eccentric and well-known anyway before the rebellion, but there was activists from all sorts of different fields and lots of women involved through it. And through the beauty of archives, we're learning about their personalities, we're learning about their own stories, you know, what made them want to join the rebels. And that's
What was the name of the group? Because you can pronounce it. I can't. It's Gaelic.
I had to practice a lot. It's Cumann na mBan, which is the Irish for the Women's Society, if you like. So they were the women's auxiliary of the Irish Volunteers. So there were three main bodies who were involved in who made up the rebels, if you like. So there was the Irish Volunteers, there was the Irish Citizen Army, which was James Connolly, one of the signatories and the organisers, and that's who Countess Markovitch was involved with. And then there was Cumann na mBan, who were not as activist, not as political as the Citizen Army women, but certainly played a big role in it. And through this whole commemoration in 2016, a lot of the Cumann na mBan stories have been told, as well as the women of the Citizens Army. They were never told before.
Now, were they actually fighters, or were they nurses and supporting the fighters?
Well, the Cumann na mBan women would have been more supporters. So they were nurses, but they were cooks. They were, you know, there was a lot of things that need moving around the city, so they did a lot of that. But they were very brave. They were dispatch messengers, a lot of them. So there's terrific stories coming out of young women, and a lot of them were very young, 15, 16. You know, there's stories about a 14-year-old, as well as young women in their 20s, darting through the city, which by the time that, you know, the rebellion is underway and the British Army have got their forces in, it's a very dangerous city. And they're darting from garrison, the 20 garrisons, to take messages between the different leaders.
So why were their stories not really told properly before now?
Well, I've heard a lot of schools of thought over the last, you know, couple of months, because there has been so much in the media here and so much. Many people asking themselves that question. How come we only thought that one woman in the entire rebellion was Countess Markovitch, who was Anglo-Irish, who was a friend of Yeats? You know, Countess Markovitch was constant Constance Gore Booth from Listerdale in Sligo. So she'd had a poem written about her by Yeats.
And she married a Polish aristocrat, didn't he?
Yes, with a very fine name, and which we've all just learnt to pronounce as well. But so I think there was a real thought for school people that she was the only one involved. But as I mentioned, as archive material became available, and as there was a longing from women who else was there? Who were the nurses? And more we've realised that there were 77 women imprisoned. Up to 300 women, they think, were involved. And again, the numbers for the whole rebellion is about 2,000 of the rebels. So that's a fairly high amount, I think. And each of them has a terrific story to tell. You know, there was one woman, Margaret Skinner, who was Scottish-born but of Irish parents, and she was a firebrand. And she had got to know Countess Markovitch and living in Glasgow, but would come over. She joined Cumann na Mon in Glasgow. And she was smuggling explosives over on the boat. There's a great story about her that she had the wires on her body on the boat and the detonators in her hat. But she had to sleep the night. Everybody else was down in their staterooms. But she knew that she had these detonators. So she was too fearful to go down in case she hit against a pipe or something and set it off. So instead, she sat in a deck chair with her head leaning against, you know, her hat, and discovered afterwards when she got here and delivered them, all the, you know, these explosives, they said, no, the detonator reacts to pressure. And so she thought she spent the night with her head on her hat. So, great stories.
I mean, there's another great story that I love about Rosie Hackett, who was, I think, a unionist. They actually opened a bridge last year down near the Liberty Hall, which was the centre of the trade unions. They named it after her. Now, as one taxi driver said to me, because she'd played such a role, not only during the rising, but in the aftermath, in supporting all the various members of the, you know, the survivors and the labour movement. As he said, when did we know about Rosie Hackett? What Dubliners knew about Rosie Hackett? So this, like, there was a deliberate attempt, was there not, to write women out, which is pretty sort of striking, I think.
I often wonder about that, because I don't think it's that historians sat around a room saying, well, we know that there were women, but let's not talk about them. I think it was of its time. The stories were there, it's just that male historians chose not to tell them. They concentrated on the more dramatic of the signatories, and it was a huge error, and that's why it's so fresh.
Well, maybe it's more than an error. It is a big sort of choice, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, and I think that's why this commemoration this year is so fresh and has ignited so everybody's imaginations in a way, because there's a real sense that we're getting the whole story this time. We're not just hearing about those ones that the kids in their Irish, you know, schoolrooms, you know, everybody could say the names of the seven signatories on the proclamation. Rosie Hackett helped print the proclamation. You know, this fantastic story that they only printed a couple of thousand. That was her job. She was a printer. And that's why she got so unionised and became very involved with James Connolly, with the Citizens' Army, because that grew out of the Dublin lockout, which was about workers' rights. So she was in her early 20s during the rising. But I think, I've lived here for 25 years and I'd never heard of her. And so, how wonderful that, you know, now one of the new bridges over the Liffey is named after her, because a lot of people say, well, who is she? And these three Labour councillors, young women, who campaigned for her, because went to a public vote for the long list for the name of the bridge. And Maeve Binchy, for example, was on the long list, and Bram Stoker, who wrote Dracula, was, and some other councillors and, you know, people involved in Dublin. And then Rosie Hackett, she got the vote from the Dublin Council. So,
oh, hallelujah for that.
Yeah.
Well, look, let's just go to the signage around this green, because it was so important, has really been done very well. Let's walk to one of the main spots where you can just, you know, very quickly summarise why this matters. Okay, so where have you brought me now?
We are at one of the panels that the Office of Public Works, who look after St Stephen Green, have set up for the centenary year of the 1916 Rising. And so dotted all around the whole green are placards explaining different aspects of what happened here in the green during the Easter week. And this particular one talks about four women especially who were involved in this particular garrison here at St Stephen's Green. And it's Margaret Skinner, who's the young Scottish-Irish woman who was a sniper. Dr Kathleen Lynn, who was the chief medical officer. So a woman was the chief medical officer with the rebels, alongside Sergeant Madeleine French Mullen, who was in charge of the field hospital here in St. Stephen's Green, and so that was in the bandstand that we can see over there.
Yes.
Exactly. As it turned out, it was such a disaster, the whole operation in St. Stephen's Green. That was only used for a night and a day because everything went so badly wrong. They moved very quickly across to the College of Surgeons building behind us, which again was a disaster because they hadn't thought about food. But they had taken over a garrison at the Jacobs Biscuit Factory, not very far from here, and the story is that a lot of the young women who were doing the dispatch messenger work between the different garrisons were also ferrying biscuits back from the biscuit factory, so they lived off biscuits.
And look, just this Margaret Skinner character, just tell us about what sort of a person she became.
She's a terrific person. A lot of things that happened after, it was disappointing for a lot of Irish women after the Rising. I think it was a very exciting time for the young women involved at the time, to feel that they were so close to the action, to be allowed by this, you know, forward-thinking men like Pourig Pearce and James Connolly, two of the signatories to the proclamation, who, you know, absolutely invited women to be involved. The proclamation talks about Irish men and Irish women, and it talked about equal rights for all Ireland citizens. And that was really pretty much played out during the Rising, that women were involved. And Margaret Skinner was one of the few women to be engaged in actual combat. Like she was a trained rifle. She was a sniper, and she was shot about 2 days after the Rising began. She'd gone into Harcourt Street, which is just behind us. So she was shot 3 times and was taken to hospital, but because she had a Scottish accent, the feeling is that kind of got her off a bit more lightly, that she wasn't blamed so much for her involvement. But she had been a maths teacher before she'd come over. She just took a week's holiday from her teaching job to come over and take part in the Rising, and stayed in Ireland, and took teaching jobs and became very active politically in the teaching union, and in fact became the president of the Irish Teachers Union.
You were telling me about the De Valera story, who became, of course, the first Taoiseach and the first president, and was one of the sort of great
founders of modern Ireland.
Yeah, and sort of resilient characters of the 20th century. And he had a very different view about the role of women, didn't he?
He certainly did. Connolly and Pearce and presumably some of the other leaders were very pro-women being involved. De Valera was the only, possibly was one other garrison leader, but he was the main garrison leader who didn't let women in to fight alongside.
Really?
Now, whether it was because he was traditionalist or because, who knows, I don't know the reasons why, but he counteracted the order from Pearce and Connolly to let the women of Comyn na Mon and the female members of the Irish Citizen Army to fight alongside the garrison that he was in charge of. And apparently his men were very unhappy about that, not for political feminist reasons, but because they then had to do their own cooking.
Yeah.
And then Connolly and Pearce were executed. De Valera, his number didn't come up, basically. Sometimes it's said that it was because he was an American citizen, but the more thinking now is that the public outcry against the executions had got so big that they stopped executing him just before they were about to get to De Valera. So he got away he got away with it. And he played a major role in the Constitution, which unfortunately really put the cause of women's rights back.
Explicitly.
Article 41 of the Constitution, when, you know, in the 20s and 30s, when Ireland, you know, got full republic status and wrote its own constitution, was that they pretty much said that women's place is in the home. And it has been a very difficult time for women in Ireland. I think that, you know, every battle that they've had, they're still fighting. Women are still fighting battles in Ireland. It's not completely downtrodden, but there is a sense that women are still fighting to be heard here. And I think that's another good byproduct of the Rising commemorations, because hearing these other stories alongside the famous stories of signatories of the proclamation and the rebels, I think it will make young Irish women, particularly young kids who are learning about it in school for the first time, feel that there are role models for them.
Well, Monica, thank you very much indeed for just letting us sample some of it. So thanks again very much.
Thank you very much.
Monica McInerney, we were talking in St. Stephen's Green. She's a Dublin-based author now. Her 11th novel, Hello from the Gillespies, was released a couple of years ago. She's working on another. I'll be producing a 2-part documentary for our Earshot programs in weeks to come about how a country re-examines its history. And that Neil Jordan film, Michael Collins, which is on this whole period, a new print has just been released, which might interest you. I'm Geraldine Doogue. I do hope you can join me at the same time next week or online via the RN website.